Hello.
Welcome back. You have re-entered the House of Neshama, hosted by myself, Aria Rachel.
And me, Isa Biza.
For those who know us, offline or online since our launch, thank you for the love and support. It means so, so much to us. And for those who are new, we're so happy you found us. So, what are we doing here? The House of Neshama podcast is a place where we muse over Jewish culture, rituals, and humor.
Kvetch about the complications about our Jewish identities.
Mm-hmm. And certainly lots of that in this episode. And we do so in hopes of sparking necessary conversations and reflections with other Jews across the diaspora.
In other words, you can consider this podcast the matzo ball soup for the wandering Jewish soul.
Yes, so we invite you to listen back to our first episode that will offer you a bit of insight into who we are, our stories, dilemmas, Jewish backgrounds, and a little bit of our motivation behind this podcast, and also our Instagram page. You could check us out at House of Neshama. And I am just verklempt that we are here with episode 2.
We made it!
Which it's been a long time coming behind the scenes. But in this episode is filled with some of our favorite and not so favorite things.
Yes, in the soup today, we got the synchronicity within the Jewish experience, or at least ours, resiliency of the Jewish spirit, an encounter with a certain Patty character that led to a vulnerable and nuanced conversation about race in the Jewish community, and just the general microaggression. So we're going to get into it today.
So please stay tuned for all that is to come after the break, and enjoy. So Isa, what was Jewish about your day?
Oh my God. You know, today it was very literal. I had some bagels from this place called Russ and Daughters. It's like legendary place in New York apparently, but I was showing my friend around New York City and was like, we have to like go and like have some bagels. He really wanted some, and you know,
yeah,
me being new here, I was like, I don't know. Like, so I had to
Google
like
it. Where is the best of the best?
So I was like, okay, I have to find this place, and it was bomb. Okay, let me tell you, the bagels were like fresh, yes, like schmear salmon. There was just like where you see ice cream.
Oh my God,
you know, those like tubs. It was perfect. Like different, yeah, schmears. And they had, like, little spoons in them.
A Jewish ice cream shop, you know? Like,
yeah, a Jewish ice cream shop. No, but it had everything. They had, like, hamantash in there. They had, like, they had matzo ball soup to go.
Eh?
They had, like, Dr. Brown's.
My dad loves that.
Wait, it's so good.
I didn't know that's Jewish.
Oh, it's very, it's Jewish.
Really? My dad always had it in the house, and I never made the connection.
It's Jewish because they have a root beer. They have a cola, like a cream soda. Yeah. And my mom, like, she's the one who introduced me to it. And, like, yeah, anyway, the guy, you know, when I entered in there, I don't think he was expecting me to, like, like, know all this stuff. When I handed it to him, the Dr. Brown's, he was like, ah, this is a good one. He just respected me immediately when I selected Dr. Brown's. Yeah, anyway, that was kind of my thing. I just finally, you know, showed my friends around Jewish places. My non-Jewish friends.
Well, that's important. I feel like it's my duty. If I'm going to be your token Jewish friend, you have to have good bagels.
Mm-hmm.
We can't deny ourselves.
I've been brought back into the light with bagels, honestly, because I was in Seattle and that I was missing out. Apparently, it's the water in New York. I looked this up. Apparently, there's like something in the water that if you boil them, there's minerals.
It's true. It's the water. Wait, minerals. I just thought.
I'm sure it's the minerals. There's like some. There's some scientific explanation for it.
Honestly, anyone that knows me knows at some point I've said that to them, whether they're from New York or not from New York. I'm like,
it's in the water.
It's in the water. I don't know what to tell you. Like,
yeah. Yeah. So there's something Jewish in everything.
Yes. Which is why what drew us to this prompt is that there will be things that we feel every day will be Jewish, even in its essence.
Yeah. I feel like there's something Jewish about your cat.
Really?
I do. Yeah.
I hope so. Right now, she's still a nameless cat, which makes me feel really guilty as a cat mother. So as a Jewish cat mother, I feel like I don't know. We're going through some stuff right now. She's my little gremlin, though.
I love this.
I don't know if there's anything Jewish about gremlins.
We love our children, but, you know, there's dark humor to it. I think it's like we talk stuff about the few things we love or we, you know, we're learning to love, right? You gotta sometimes, you know, talk shit about them. You know, it's like my mom used to call me, like, out of good luck.
Oh, my God. And what did she call you? Oh, no.
Oh, no. Well, it's like this thing, like, you know, actually, this is a reference also in the drag community, but everybody says, hello, ugly, like, you know, like, it's like.
Wait, I remember when you told me this last time, and I still was like, wait, like, I don't think I've ever come into contact with someone just calling me ugly out of endearment.
Yes, out of endearment.
Yeah.
Like, you're ugly. Like, you're so, like, disgusting. Like, you're disgustingly beautiful. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like.
It makes me sick.
Yeah, you are. No, no, literally, she said, you are so gorgeous. I'm sick right now.
I'm ill.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. Real quick, I just want to tell you about my longtime project, Neshama, the Jewish Soul. It is an ongoing interactive documentary and living, breathing archive that takes a deeply intimate dive into Jewish womanhood in the United States. Told from the voices of Jewish women themselves across a variety of racial, ethnic, and Judaic backgrounds, it's a place for you to hear the unique and eclectic stories, journeys, and perspectives on that crucial topic of what it means to be a Jewish woman. You can see some of the stories featured by visiting neshama.amandapeckler.com. And if you're interested in participating and simply learning more, send us an email at neshama.interact@gmail.com. All right, back to the episode. Welcome back. Something extra special about this episode is that we actually will be reacting to ourselves when we interviewed each other back in April 2021. So just under a year ago, but nonetheless, still past versions of ourselves.
Sometimes it's cringy to listen back at these things. Sometimes it's like validating to listen back. And so I'm happy to do it with you.
Yeah. No, I'm both like humbled and like nervous when it comes to listening back to these tapes. So much life had happened to both of us since then.
We have gone through a lot. We've moved different places. Since the last time we recorded, I made it to New York. And it's been like the most crazy, surreal experience. So now that I'm here, I just have like I have a similar and different perspective.
Yeah. And something that I think struck me, and I think me and Issa share this, where a lot of our work has been about centering other people's stories and other people's experiences. So just the fact that our voices and stories are at the forefront in these episodes has been a bit out of my comfort zone.
Totally agree. Sometimes it takes going into someone else's story to bring out the questions you have for yourself and to tell your own story. And to feel comfortable telling your own story, knowing that someone else is revealing their story. As producers, like, we are, like, we are integrated and we are curious of the world and we want to tell people stories. And I don't think we're necessarily, like, hiding our story, but we're figuring out how to tell our own story. And I think, like, through all this, through listening to people, through me listening to Amanda, I learn how to better tell my story every day, you know? Definitely, like, through this past year. And what through the podcast is, like, we're going to be listening to a lot of other people's stories. You might not know completely our whole story immediately. And I think the introduction, while, like, it, you know, we did introduce ourselves, there's so much to us. So you're going to be, like, seeing more, you're going to be learning more about us as this, you know, journey continues.
Yeah. And I love that you can't cover it. And I think that speaks to what we're going to dive into in this episode. The Jewish people are multifaceted and complex, and our experiences, our own identities reflect that.
So as Amanda said, we recorded this back in 2020, no shame, 2021.
But you know what? We follow a Jewish New Year anyway.
What is time? And now we're going to replay it for you guys. I think that, you know, even though I'm adopted, I feel like I have this like
ancestral connection with like my grandparents, my great grandparents and their grandparents. And I just like, I definitely feel, I mean, there's pressure there to like continue the traditions, but like,
yeah,
I feel like life was synchronous in this way that like I was almost meant to be Jewish.
That was me from last year.
Yes.
Saying like a lot of times, but also some interesting things that I'm still pondering. I think a lot of people struggle with like not knowing where they come from and like being adopted. Like I've always felt in touch for some reason with my ancestors that are Jewish, and like I've always felt like, you know, at growing up I was always someone who was more not like devout but like just very committed to like these Jewish traditions, yeah, that my parents were not. And like I felt like kind of like a calling, and I not like I wanted to prove something to other people, but I did want to prove it to myself that like I am Jewish. And like, and even though I didn't know my like great grandparents, like I know motivated me a lot in like carrying on Jewish traditions. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna bat mitzvah. I'm like, you know, even though that wasn't traditional in like a lot of senses, you know, during when my mom was growing up, I think that was the first generation that was of women who were getting bat mitzvah, because usually it wasn't common.
Right. Wow.
But I'm gonna carry on.
I mean, I was so moved when you first shared it, and I think I never heard some of that phrasing before. I think, one, the fact that you said it was, like, synchronous. When I learned that word at some point in college about it being, like, meaningful coincidences, like, I never thought about it in relation to, like, what it means to be Jewish. And the fact that you said you were meant to be Jewish, like, that was such a powerful phrase to me. How did you know? Like, how does one come to, I guess, to that point where you were like, yeah, this was meant to happen in exactly the way my life led to this moment?
This idea of like destiny, like, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, and you reminded me of the, you know, the word Besheret, like,
yes,
it's meant to be. It's, for me, there's no other way of life. I mean, yes, my future is like open and everything, but like I sometimes I wonder, you know, like if I was like adopted by a different family, or like if I was, you know, situations were different, I wasn't, things would be different. But I do think that like I would always be searching for something. And I do think that, like, for some reason, like, this was, these are the moments that, not like there's, like, a divine intervention or anything, but I do think that, like, it was kind of, like, meant to be that I was always going to be aligned with a religion or a spiritual practice that honored resiliency and, like, just, and we're going to get into that, too. But I've always felt like I've always been kind of, not like an outsider, but, like, I've always been someone who's felt like an underdog or always striving for something, and that's made me hungry and passionate for more things. And I feel like being Jewish is a lot of that, and synchronicity is like so important to that, because it's like it's honoring that special moment. Oh, I was dealt with this, or I was dealt with that. No, it was like meant to be in a positive way. And whether you're meeting someone, I believe me and my mom adopting me, my dad adopting me, like, we're like synchronous because we're just so familiar. And I don't know, people describe it like that, like you're not, and you've I know you've raised it as like actively choosing something, but it's kind of like just like there's no control over it, it's just kind of meant to be.
Yeah, no, of course. And I think, right, you could choose what you do with the information, but you can't help what is just meant to be true. Like, I think even like the ways like we met, yes, and I think that this definitely speaks to the fellow wandering Jews, right, where it's like we maybe weren't intentionally, or maybe we were somewhere deep inside, but we're not given more quote-unquote obvious spaces to find other Jews or like-minded people. So that's where it does feel like synchronicity when you find another Jewish person in an unexpected place. And you talked about that in our first interview, even in Seattle, right? Because when there's and I felt that way growing up in North Rockland, when there's less Jews around, when you do find each other, there is something really special about that.
Yeah, and like if I meet someone who's another minority, you know, has maybe not the same experience as a Jewish person, but like, you know, they don't feel like recognized or whatever, I have that similar relation with them, you know, if they're Muslim or if you know they're a fellow adopted person. And I think it's just that like Judaism really values that, like people who don't feel like they belong, or like, you know, they invite them in. You know, it's very inclusive and like,
well, it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be inclusive. But I think it comes down to values. Like, at the end of the day, like, we know what it's like to feel alone, and we want to help someone else then to make them feel less alone.
Another thing that me and Issa definitely really value, and something Issa really showed me, is like, it is how special mm-hmm. that is of sharing each other's stories. Because, right, you could meet another Jewish person or someone else that shares a specific identity with you. I would say, I believe, like, there's unspoken things where it's just, it's a common understanding. It's just, it's familiar. It's a sense of home. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if you don't actually go into that exchange, you can't actually build community from there. It's mm-hmm. it's not enough to just be like, I recognize you mm-hmm. as we share this one thing. I think our desire is then from there, you connect further and you see the ways that you share things. And also there's distinctions. All Jews yeah. might be connected, but that doesn't mean we're a monolith. Yes. Doesn't mean we're the same. So I think that's even more powerful if you're connected despite having your differences, which makes me feel, I don't know, that feels like so cheesy when you say it out loud, but it's true.
And it's like, the I think vulnerability is also a big part of that, where it's like, yeah. we are not like we've predetermined our destiny, but I feel like if you are open to the world and you're like, you know, you're open to a level of vulnerability with other people, like, that's going to bring people into your life that you're going to learn mm-hmm. a lot from, and you're going to have a lot of commonalities. And I think that's like why we met, because, and why we connected so well, because we were like thinking about, you know, telling stories in a way that were emotions piece. We were thinking about how people,
it's ethics. We were thinking about,
yeah, should, justice, should ethics. Should
we be even picking up the camera? Yeah.
And I do think that came from, I mean, that's our education, but also just like the values that we have yeah. grown up with. And that's where I believe that like synchronicity connects with Judaism, because when we practice these certain rituals, we are being mindful and we are opening ourselves out to people, meeting people.
Yes, so more to come on that topic.
Yeah.
And stick with us after the lovely music break from the wonderful Marnie Loffman.
We love Marnie.
Beautiful listeners, we so appreciate you sticking with us. And now I suppose it is my turn to share an old musing of mine from that 2021 interview. Here it is. Like, I think there is something really resilient about a Jewish spirit that even if you're not practicing, and even if like generations have gone by, the spirit of what it means to be Jewish lives on, and those who decide to pick it back up. And the fact that me and you have at a certain point have chosen to carry on certain things when maybe even our own parents didn't take on certain traditions. Like, I think there's something to that. And I think I'm very proud. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah. I don't know. So what are your thoughts about listening back to these, you know, great meaningful revelations and about Jewish spirit?
Yeah, that's a belief I've held on to for as long as I've known myself. I could have memories of what it means to be Jewish. I think I was taught resiliency. That's probably one of the first things I was taught, even like going to Hebrew school. And I think that, right, that comes from when you're learning about the Holocaust all the time. But the spiritual aspect of it, I don't think I really was able to give language to until I realized that you're allowed to be like a Jewish spiritual person. Like, that wasn't really part of my like Judaic upbringing as a child.
Yeah. It was a given, kind of, like, you were, you know, it was like,
I guess, but honestly, I thought I had to look at other traditions. I thought about with Judaism, it was really just about my relationship with like this distant, you know, ruler of the universe, like a this male presence that existed outside of the world that we exist in. Mm-hmm. When I think of spirituality, I think about, right, my soul. I think about this world that we live in. I think about me and my own body and my own power. and it took me, you know, in my own journey, and I'm still on it, to realize, like, I didn't have to look elsewhere. Judaism actually has an entire rich history in scripture, and it's all here, and there's layers and layers of what it means to be Jewish spiritually. So I'm kind of glad that I think it's always been there, even if I didn't realize it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you were like, we are going to survive this. You know, yeah, it within yourself that you've done this before.
Yeah. And I think also, like, what I was taught, and I think this came from Hebrew school and growing up, is this idea of us being, like, the chosen people, which means, by this definition, how I made sense of it, is that we were chosen to carry the burden, right, of making sure that we make the world, we leave it a better place, mm-hmm, than how we found it, even when the world didn't want us to be here and still doesn't want us to be here yet. In the midst, yeah, of that, we're still supposed to, yeah, try to make it a better place and not just keep to ourselves. It makes sense why we also carry such tremendous generational trauma, because mm-hmm, it's such a contradiction, right? We're supposed to be like almost like models, right, for like how to be a good person, but also the more we shine, the more people can also completely destroy us. Exactly. Like, I think the people who are most at risk in the Jewish community, right, are the ones who are most physically, when you see them, they're like, when you're in a place of worship, mm-hmm, or when we show it, if we like wear our Star of David, it's like choices like that is what's going to make us a target. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense why people also hid their Jewishness for so long, but it's layers and layers of just like this really hurtful and also, you know, complicated, yeah, beautiful, complex relationship with the rest of the world. Because we need to protect ourselves, but then we also need to show people who we are.
Exactly. You got to be it. Like, you got to be yourself because everyone else is taken.
Boom.
Yeah, my mom gave me a card that said that. That was a big thing when I was growing. You know, when you're trying to try on so many things, mm-hmm, like, you can't lie to yourself that you grew up in a different way sometimes.
And you are who you are, right.
And when you embrace that, and yes, you don't need to embrace everything, you need to stay true to who yourself. So, like, if you're, yeah, who yourself are not religious, you don't need to pretend that you are,
yeah,
but like whatever you grew up with or like what you feel like you are now, it's important to embrace that. And if you feel like that's within you, like, it's you deserve to feel like you can do that comfortably. And sometimes that means in a resilient way, when you're like, you know, doing nonviolent demonstrations, people out in different parts of the world doing, you know, showing that they can still practice their traditions. And it's like, oh, you don't have to be silent about it. The silence is what kills things.
Oh, yeah.
People are like thinking, oh, why do they think they're so special? Because they're called the chosen people. Like, I'm not, like I said, like that thing that's like a dangerous word at all. It's just, I do feel like sometimes we call attention to ourselves, but like not in a way that's like we're better than other people, but we are saying that like you're proud of our traditions. But it is interesting, whenever it gets to that point, it's a threat to other people. So even though it's like not
even right, even if it literally has nothing to do with them, yeah, and it does not erase the fact that like we still are here in all our like right complications and multiplicity, yeah, but all people really want is like, oh, so you think you're better than me? You think you're better than me because you're the chosen people? Mm-hmm. It's like, we didn't choose to be I'm like flipping my hair. We didn't choose to be chosen.
Yeah.
Thank you very, yeah, much. Like, we're right. We have to, we either rise to the occasion, yeah, or not, but you, sorry, we can't help it.
Yeah. I think the thing about being proud of your culture is that like, it creates a space where people feel comfortable being proud, but it's a thing that's something that other people can learn from. It's not, you know, just because someone has like, talk about Black excellence, doesn't mean like you're not part of that conversation. You can like help empower Black people and Black communities without feeling like it's impending on you.
Yeah.
And obviously you're like, you know, acknowledging privilege and everything, but I do, yeah, think that it takes acknowledging that, how positive this can be, honoring Jewish resiliency, learning from Jewish resiliency. I think definitely we need a lot more education. I think when people hear Holocaust education, they're like, what comes up is like, why are we learning this? There's so many other things going on in the world. And I think like, this is an introductory point, like of like how this can happen to people and also how people were able to beat this. And I think it is a good example of that, like how people were able to be resilient. And yeah, I know I am afraid sometimes to bring up the Holocaust because it's something like people have been like, oh, well, we've learned about that. But I don't think Jewish resiliency is something that has been taught.
Oh, I totally agree. I think for me and even my Hebrew school, you know, teachings growing up and Yeah, definitely barely happened in my public school education. And, you know, we're only scratching the surface here. There's so much that we can learn, and really, yes, anyone can be learning from Jewish resiliency. But I do think the story we have coming up next for you all really shows a moment in time where our resiliency and pride across multiple identities was tested, which, you know, that can happen anytime, anywhere. And for us, it was unexpectedly at a dinner party with an ignorant but bold stranger. So we hope you're ready for that meal, because we were not. But it is definitely being served, so be sure to stick around for that after the break.
Okay, bringing us into this epic story.
Da, da, da.
I mean, it happened in a sleepy afternoon in Portland, Oregon. Ariel and I were sitting together on this porch. I had roped Ariel into coming with me to my host family's party. At the time, we were editing our fellowship capstone documentary, and there was free food. A quick nosh before getting back into the editing process couldn't hurt. Then the guests arrived.
Yes, a woman with about like short bleach blonde hair.
She had a bob haircut.
Yes, we mustn't forget the bob. Kind of like, not a valley girl, like whatever the Pacific Northwest version.
Like she felt like a hiking mom, hiking Karen.
She's a hiking Karen, but for us, she felt like a Patty. So she walks up the wooden stairs with her husband. He seemed like a nice guy, you know? And their children, which we found out pretty quickly were homeschooled, which we think that's an important detail for you all to know. And upon sitting down, one of the first things that happens, she looks at her husband and just kind of was like looking at me, and she said this out loud, so I heard every word, and she said, "Todd, like, doesn't she look just like Rebecca? You know, the girlfriend of a..." And from that moment, I already knew where this was probably gonna go. You know, when you just feel it in your bones, you know, something even playfully anti-Semitic might be coming. And needless to say, I was spotted.
I was looking over at Ariel, and I was like, this is an awkward situation. And also, like, she's not responding. So is this woman getting the hint? I mean, luckily, she went back to small talk. And then out of nowhere, she came at Ariel again and exclaimed,
"What are you?" Surprisingly prepared and definitely unprepared for this question, but I responded with enough sass to know she wasn't going to be happy with my response. But I said to her, "I'm white, just like you, Patty." So, you know, she said things like to clarify, like, "Oh no, I was just asking, like your family, where are they from?" And it kept going. It kept going until it was practically forced out of me. I stammered it out. "I'm Jewish." You know, thinking to myself, is she happy now? Like, what a relief for her, you know, that she was right. Like, because, right, I wasn't her kind of white.
That was freaking, first of all, I remember being there and just being like, you had just been, you know, transplanted yourself to Portland for like a summer. Like, you knew you were not going to be there. You probably were like, "I'm only going to be here for like a little bit. I'm just going to like leave soon." So,
yeah, I'm not here to like, you know, make friends. I'm here to make change. I'm here to make documentaries. But then after all that, you know, she did take a break on me.
But unfortunately, I was next. And how dare she not ask me if I'm Jewish? She did ask about my nationality, though, and where I'm from. But I guess I'm used to that. Jewish is not something people guessed when they see me. I told her, I was like, "Mexico." Then she went off on a tirade about her experiences in Mexico. Something along the lines of spending years smuggling babies across the southern border. Claiming that these moms that were giving away their babies were prostitutes and couldn't raise them. It's really hard to, you know, give away a child. And it's a very sensitive subject, which I was really stunned how she was like kind of throwing it out there that fast and
very casually, right? At a dinner party.
I definitely didn't think that she knew I was adopted, but like, you know, because she was talking about this, I was like, okay, I'm like, I need to say something, like, you know, like, because like maybe she'll know something about like my experience. Then I realized she was completely wrong. Like, as soon as I opened up to her about this, I was like, you know, I was adopted from Tijuana. her eyes lit up and she was like, oh, honey, your parents probably bought you. Oh, and I was like, oh, no.
Abort, like, control, alt, delete this conversation.
This lady does not know me. Like, but, like, Ariel, I really wanted to know how far she could take it. I mean, and I did feel infantilized in that situation because, I don't know, it's like she was, like, bringing me to the light of, like, who I am, that whole white savior mentality. Just because I'm adopted doesn't mean it has to be a tragic story. I mean, nothing else mattered in that situation. It's like people, they focus so much on a certain aspect of identity that they just forget the rest. And really that absence that bugged me.
I think just, you know, sitting there, like witnessing like how invasive that was, just coming for you in your roots, like in such a casual way. Just between the energy that must take, or maybe this was a casual Wednesday night for her. So you would think she would need a rest, but she was just getting warmed up. You know, it kind of felt like a tennis match. I mean, we couldn't really hit back to her, I suppose. But so maybe would you say it's like dodgeball?
I think so. I mean, one offense and just, you know, people trying to, you know, cover their faces.
Yeah. And also just like the ways that she was trying to be the expert of like so many different things she knows nothing about. And I think that was really clear what she was sending your way. And I think for me, she didn't know enough about Jews. So she just had a lot more questions.
Yeah.
So at this point, I kind of accepted defeat. I've dealt with, you know, people asking, you know, and being curious about all kinds of Jewish questions. How, I mean, me and you are really curious too, right? Like, it makes sense to be curious about what's different from you. But I kind of honestly lost like my power and my willingness to be happy sharing this. Like, I kind of surrendered to some invasive questions about my dietary choices, to my love and romantic life trajectory. These really intimate topics with a complete stranger that felt entitled to every last bit of it.
This is not a private conversation. This is like for everyone to hear. There's definitely an audience to this conversation.
Yeah, this is a podcast. If she had a microphone, she would record us, like, truly, so that she could play it for her friends.
She's like, oh my gosh, I think I know these two girls from the party.
You wouldn't believe. Oh god, I can't even. But it is safe to say she felt very connected to us and our stories. And you know, she did share some of her own throughout the night. This one time, you know, she went to the Holocaust Museum, of course, in DC. And this is the line that I think will haunt me for the rest of my days. And she looked me dead in the eye and she probably thought we were gonna be friends. And she said, you know, it's crazy. They all look just like you.
Yikes. Speechless.
Yeah. I think at the time it was so absurd. Like, I mean, I could only kind of laugh at that. Like, I don't know what would compel someone to utter those words and like what the goal would be.
Also in that moment, I pictured for some reason like a photo from the Holocaust.
I imagined like boy in the striped pajamas.
Yes, I know.
I literally imagined some Eastern European girl who's really pale like me with like a, you know, a distinct nose and like the same brown hair. Like literally like the stereotype.
That's horrible.
For listeners who aren't, I guess, Jewish, the patties of the world, like, it's not a compliment. We could give you plenty of other ways to try and connect.
Cut to two tired friends sitting on a metallic bench as the sun is setting. You know, maybe, I think we were waiting for the bus and looking at each other, exhausted. Like, people like this still exist. People ask these questions. They, you know, pigeonhole people, and, you know, there's ignorance in both ways. Like, not knowing anything, and then also knowing the wrong things, the social norms that have been upheld by white supremacy.
And of course, to her, maybe it would just become another story that she'll share at her next dinner party, or her children that she teaches how the world works and who lives within it. Or maybe it's entertainment. And for us, a story that we would remember, guys, 4.5 years later.
Everywhere we have gone, we are together and we have repeated the story. And that is very Jewish.
I was going to say, that is very Jewish to tell the same story
over
and over until you get just as sick of it as us.
Yeah.
Well, we have a lot to unpack from that glorious time. You know, there was a lot going on. But I think for starters, I mean, I think something that was, I know, noticeable for me was I had less experience dealing with those kinds of exchanges. But for you, it was kind of like a casual Tuesday, unfortunately. And also, I remember you just sharing that was something that was more normal just in the spaces you navigate growing up. Like, if you could expand on, like, how that felt, just what Patty was directing attention to. And then, of course, the parts of your identities that completely went, you know, she wasn't going to ask about. Like, she wasn't inquiring about your Jewish identity or literally anything else.
I don't know. I've been thinking about this a lot. And like I said in, you know, the story, growing up, I kind of, like, didn't really feel like I fit in to, like, the Jewish community because, like, I didn't look like them, even though my family, you know, I was raised, both my parents were Ashkenazi Jewish. And then it's like, sometimes I forget about what other people think of me who are not Jewish. And like, because like, there's like this whole othering Jews, and then it's like, they forget that there's brown Jews, they invalidate it. So like, if you were to even bring it up, they would be like, what? How is that possible?
Yeah, if you tried talking about race and Jewishness with Patty, her brain would explode.
Yeah, and like putting me as a Mexican person into categories, like I said, again, getting into this white savior mentality.
Yeah.
Because that was to both of us. In that case, as a white person who's like not Jewish, like who's not Hispanic, she didn't consider like is harmful in the ways that like you are like talking about someone like traumatic experience, or both traumatic experiences. You're talking about the Holocaust and you're talking about someone's adoption from a, you know, a country. And like for me, it triggered memories of being not like adopted, but like what's more triggering is like the social stigma of adoption and how people view me as like not being anything else.
Yeah, I mean, in the moment, I remember mainly being like a bystander, especially when she was sending all these blows your way. And now, right, I mean, obviously giving grace to our past selves, and I think in general for anybody, like, you're not always going to speak up in the moments that you feel like you should have, or even the ways like I didn't speak up for myself in the ways I thought I should have. But now I think what I'm sitting with is like, as your friend witnessing like this white woman just send this ignorance to you, yeah, like, what do you feel would you have wanted the role of that friend to be?
I definitely would like someone to come up to my defense, but also situational. And I think really turning the conversation, maybe like asking me more about my experience, turning it away from her trying to claim my experience.
Yeah. Also, when you think about agency, I think for both of us, these weren't us sharing anything on our own terms. It was just like this woman pulling it out of us. And I think I remember feeling so powerless, but I think what I'm hearing now is like there would be something really powerful if we were thrown into that situation again. Then we honestly just start to have our own conversation in front of her, you know, like, or like start to push the questions back at her to ask her, what are you? What about, what's your story?
Yes, exactly. That is a really good way, because even when you could say what are you without being like at her, it's like, no. I'm distinguishing you from me.
Depending where you are in the country, it doesn't matter what I say. If someone wants you to be deemed different from them.
And yes, I am different than you. But like, why are you framing the conversation this way? Like, what are you? You know what I'm saying? Like, in a way that's like othering. You can say it like, oh, what do you grow up, you know, doing? And if someone doesn't want to share their experience, like, they do not have to.
Even from the jump, why does someone owe you? This wasn't like a natural progression. Like, and I'm trying to think about listeners if they're in situations like this. like, this wasn't like a natural progression where we suddenly started to bring up religion or background or food or there, you know, where there's like kind of these more natural segues into learning about someone. Very early in the conversation, she wanted these details from both of us or just made these crazy assumptions. And she had narratives in her mind about who we were supposed to be based on whatever information she was working with. And we were either supposed to confirm or deny it or just accept it.
It's definitely when these moments happen, I don't know how you felt about this. I know that this experience doesn't happen often compared to like when you were in the West Coast, because like, you know, obviously you had experienced it that way, maybe small microaggressions, but to this extent.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think what created so much shock for me was the fact that at that age, like, I really didn't leave New York. So the microaggressions I would get were more subtle. And I've also dealt with, you know, different microaggressions. They're masked as compliments. Like, oh, you don't look that Jewish. Don't worry.
Wow.
What is that supposed to mean, right? Or like, don't worry, like, you're cute for a Jewish girl. And at the same time, that did speak to what it means for me being a white Ashkenazi Jew, whether or not, you know, like other people who look like me, you know, have complicated feelings about calling themselves white. When we walk through the world, we're benefiting from white privilege. The anti-Semitism doesn't go away. They don't cancel each other out. But I think for me, it did mean that, like, no one ever asked me, what are you? That was not something that was normal. That's why I had so much shock. Because I was, yeah, I was unprepared. So I think Issa was just, like, holding me after that. Like, all right, like, patting my back. Like, you'll be okay, girl.
I'm just really glad that we're talking about this. I'm really glad you were there.
It was necessary.
Wait. I don't want you to go through that again.
While I don't wish that experience upon anyone, it did speak to just how power shows up in all of our identities. And I think the fact that we're these two Jewish girls that came in, but because of the bodies that we're in, the bodies we were given, and what people do with that, how they perceive our identities and our stories, we still had very distinct experiences. And that's important because that highlights what our Jewish community consists of, and that can't go unseen and unsaid.
Again, centering this back on ourselves, we're thinking about ourselves, and I think it took me a while to, all of a sudden it became about Patty. I think, like, I was definitely centering this about Patty, and I think I need to take the time to be better to myself and not over explaining things. But I think that I do owe it to myself to, like, you know, and frame adoption in such a, like have more confidence in it and, like, not surrender to the stigmatization.
Right. We had this experience at this dinner party, but bringing us outside of it, what is that difference between, you know, being spotted on the basis of any of our identities versus, I guess, feeling seen?
You're spotted, like, that's like, oh, you're hiding something and you're not telling me. And, like, in that sense, I do think that you felt spotted. And, like, being seen is like, who are you besides what you look like, your classes, where you went to school? It's not just skin deep. What are the other parts of yourselves that you enjoy? What other people like about you? Maybe you have, like, something that you're passionate about.
You know what's funny, though, with feeling seen? Like, for me, when I felt the most seen, I think, even as a Jew, and it's going to sound weird when I say it out loud, but it's like me being Jewish wasn't the main topic of conversation, or really wasn't, like, relevant to why I was connecting with them in the first place. It came up, and then it was like a process of discovery, you know, and then it was excitement because we just learned something about each other. And I think even with me and you, that wasn't our opener. We didn't, like, look at each other and we're like, Jew, like, besties, like, no, like, I mean, but then again, Jewish geography makes this a little bit like, Jew, okay, we're in.
I feel like that's okay with other Jews. Like,
that's interesting. Yeah.
Like, with Jews, I mean, I just feel like, yes, we might not know we have the same experiences, but we do know what it's like to be spotted or, like, feel, like, that experience of feeling other and, like, you know, and you can kind of unite on that. And, like, and then, you know, there's always a chance that you don't, you know, you meet Jews that might not have the same traditions as you. But you learn. I guess I was excited when I met you. I felt seen by you. And I think that, like, you ask a lot of questions. Like, you're very, like, empathetic in the way that, like, you want to know about me. And there's, you know, the positives and the negatives. And, like, for for people like that, like I'm saying, like for people like Patty, this is what like not to do is to spot someone, and to be seen is really important. And I feel like she needs a lesson, show like spotlighting people without sensationalizing them.
Right, absolutely. And you know, I've learned so much simply from stories you've shared with me, Issa. And also listening to other Jews, you know, who don't share the same identities and experiences as me. And it shows time and time again how, you know, these things don't just happen to Jews from non-Jews like this. You know, we see different and similar kinds of othering and just like harmful behavior in Jewish spaces too.
Yeah.
Which I mean, right, it hits different when it's from your own. Like that can hurt even worse. So we definitely want that to be an ongoing conversation that we have with each other, and that can extend however far it can. So what I hope everyone takes away, Jewish or not, whether you've been in either of our positions in your own way, or Patty's, or both, you know, is to really honor the humanity of the people you meet. And when we're dreaming about things like collective liberation and whatever it takes to make our communities healthier, then I hope to the best, you know, that is possible within each of ourselves. Like, we just be sure that we don't miss out on one another.
Original music composed by Marnie Loughman. You can find their original and covered music on TikTok, SoundCloud, and Instagram under the handle @ @singing_Jewess.
Well, that's the episode. Thank you so much for listening. If we've piqued your curiosity and appetite for matzo ball soup for the wandering Jewish soul, we invite you to follow us wherever you enjoy your podcasting. And if there's any specific topics you're interested in hearing us talk about, or special guests you want us to have on the pod, we would love to hear from you. So feel free to DM us via Instagram @ House of Neshama, or drop us an email @neshama.interact.com. Until next time, everybody.